You are listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Carol Masser alongside me, Jason Kelly, on Bloomberg Radio.
The teacher got upset and she screamed out, no, it's off to the principal's office you go.
Yeah, well, kind of the principal's office. In fact, it's a lot worse. The Department of Justice, of course, giving a request to or asking Tesla for some information, and that certainly sent Tesla shares lower today in, I think, down about 4%, I think we heard Charlie say. So let's get into this criminal investigation by the Justice Department. Let's get into it with Jesse Westbrook, Bloomberg News Financial Regulation Editor in our Washington, D.C. Bureau. And back with us is John Thompson, CEO and Chief Investment Officer at Vilas Capital Management, Tesla short seller based in New York and in our Bloomberg 1130 studio right here on this Tuesday. First, I want to start with you, Jesse. You were on with David Westin. I was listening very closely. You laid out what's going on with Tesla. Break it down for our audience.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would note about prosecutors is they're a lot like journalists. They chase the hot story, and Tesla's the hot story. The tweet about taking the company private and having secured funding for it was so public, so many stories written about it. SEC got involved quickly. I mean, I think on some level, you know, not to simplify this, but I don't think the Justice Department wanted to miss the party. And you know, why not ask the company for information voluntarily about what might have gone on, what might have prompted that tweet, so on and so forth. I mean, obviously the burden for the Justice Department in proving a criminal charge is much higher for the SEC than proving a civil claim.
So, John, come on in here. We've been talking to you several times, or we talked to you several times as this has been playing out. I can't imagine you're totally surprised at these headlines today.
Not at all. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a criminal activity to try to manipulate your stock with false information. There was no money. There was no signed agreements. There was no board approval. I mean, he publicly, in his tweets, said all that's required to consummate this transaction is to get a shareholder vote, which is very, very, very far down the line in one of these types of transactions. So the fact that none of that existed was, you know, a materially false statement, and that is illegal, and it's a criminal thing to do.
Jesse, come in on this. You heard what John had to say. I mean, it does seem like, you know, Twitter, you know, he put it out there, Elon Musk, and saying, here's what we've got, here's what I want to do, and I've got funding and so on and so forth. He put that out there. As the CEO of a company, doesn't he have a fiduciary responsibility in terms of the information that he makes public? And as this story unraveled, that wasn't the case.
Well, I think what we don't know, I mean, it certainly could be a violation of securities laws to say something that's not true, to say that you have secured funding when in fact we've learned that he probably hadn't secured funding, or I mean it seems like he pretty clearly didn't
right.
secure funding. But for a criminal charge, I think you really have to be able to show that this wasn't only sort of misleading, he intentionally set out to, you know, come up with some scheme that he knew was bogus to drive the share price up, whether that was to you know, toast the shorts, or whether that was to temporarily inflate the value of the stock for some other reason. I mean, often these cases hang on an email or a conversation with someone. Like, you know, if there was a hypothetical where Elon Musk 5 minutes before sending that tweet said, I've had it with these shorts, I'm going to stick it to them once and for all, and I'm going to do that by saying I've secured funding to take the company private. I'm not sure such an email exists. I think even if that was his mind state, it's hard to show people's mind state. I can't reiterate enough that the burden of a criminal charge for a company and an executive is really high. It just does not happen very much.
And so, John, come back in on this, because this, you've had this position, this short position, before the tweet came into being. What's going on at the company beyond all of this noise that you still think justifies a short position?
First of all, they have a terrible balance sheet. It's rated CAA by Moody's, which is only a few notches above default. they're structurally unprofitable. Making cars in San Francisco is probably the worst place on the planet. You could, you know, from a cost perspective, maybe Hong Kong would be worse, but something in that order, right?
Right.
And, you know, they have a ton of competition coming in after them, and their tax rebates are going away. So I honestly think the company is going to go bankrupt. Shareholders will lose everything. Suppliers are going to lose all their receivables from Tesla. The bondholders are going to lose everything. And I think the banks will be lucky to break even in a bankruptcy proceeding. I've seen this type of thing happen multiple times before. And, you know, I think, you know, this company is not long for this world.
And to be fair, you've been making this case for a while now, right? You've had shorts for, is it a couple of years now?
Yeah.
Yeah, for a while. We got to run. John, thank you so much. John Thompson over at Vilas Capital Management. Of course, our own Jesse Westbrook, Bloomberg News financial regulation editor from our bureau in Washington. Tesla shares finished down 3.3%. Talk about making money in this financial market. Kathy Boyle is president and founder at Chapin Hill Advisors on the phone in New York. So, Kathy, it's your chance to shine and convince Jason Kelly, my co-host, about the importance of technical analysis and what it can tell us about the financial markets. He and I debate. We talk a lot about technicals.
There we go. A tall order. Okay.
No pressure, Kathy. No pressure.
Well, you know what's nice about technical analysis is it's a picture. So fundamental analysis is fabulous, but again, it's colored by everybody's perception and also by the information you're getting. But you look at a picture, and remember, a stock market is an auction market, so there's buyers and sellers. And what technical analysis tells you is when the buyers have sort of stopped buying and when the sellers have stopped selling. So that's really what it tells you. So it does provide some clue. And again, it's really based on that premise that there's, you know, places where there's going to be an even amount of buyers and sellers, and it's got to take something new to kind of push it up past the previous barrier.
Well, and one of the things that you said in a recent note, Kathy, that did jump out at me is this idea that Goldilocks is alive and well. And so based on what you just said, we're at a moment, if I understand you correctly, where we need something to move it one way or the other, right? So what's it going to be?
Yeah, well, you know what, look, we could have a continued melt up. You know, if you base on the fundamentals, you go back to the CAPE index, which is Robert Shiller's index, which people love to pounce on everything, right? But Wall Street's always one of those things where you're always wrong. You bought too little, bought too much, bought too soon, bought too late, should have bought more, should have, could have, would have, what we call it. So one of the things that we look at with the CAPE index is that it's at a place where it hasn't been for 25 years. And the last time it was in this place in terms of the adjusted earnings, the adjusted total return on the market, was in the early 90s. Now, after that, we had a melt up. You know, the 90s, we took off, and for 10 more years, we had phenomenal rates of return. I mean, the return for the Dow Jones from 82 to 2000 was 17.4% return, including dividends. The prior 16 years had been 1.4%, so very big difference. But all of the investors that are in the market now really grew up during that boom time. So the difference was the CAPE back then was only 20, and the CAPE now is 32. So if you're looking at fundamentals, we're pricey. Now, could we have a continued melt-up? Could the enthusiasm and the momentum, the bond yields are still awful, so the place to be is equities. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of momentum still driving equities.
Well, it's interesting. I was going to say that you probably could have gone a year or 2 years ago, potentially. You tell me, correct me if I'm wrong, and the CAPE was probably high, too, when we were saying, okay, enough is enough, and yet we got a couple more years.
Exactly. And that's part of the problem. I mean, I remember in 07, we were cautious in 07. Market didn't melt down until the end of 08, really,
right.
And into 09 is where the real meltdown happened. It started to frazzle in June of 08. But the peak of the market was October of 07. Earlier in 07, we started to be more cautious, and I remember clients fighting with us, you know, and saying, well, I think I'm going to go in a different direction, or I don't think there's anything wrong. And one of those clients did leave us and had a lot of money, and his son was also a client. His son told me that his father had to completely readjust his living standards because he lost so much money.
Wow.
So the problem again with Wall Street is it's hard to anticipate. You know, early is wrong.
Well, and I know one of the other things that you've talked about, Kathy, is this whole idea of how does debt broadly play into this whole equation. We talk about that a lot in the context when we talk to our bond gurus here, but it certainly is something that when you think about the current administration, you know, debt is in the vernacular for sure, especially with the president given his background. So how do you factor that into this broader market picture that you described?
So it's one of the things that really weighs on us, that we're worried about what the next shoe will be and how long the next decline might be. Because, you know, we have millennials, which we all know, 60% of millennials, 25-year-olds are living at home in 12 states. 30% of 30-year-olds are living at home. So that prevents the baby boomer parent from selling their house and moving out and assuming part of their house was part of their retirement. So it affects us, right? The millennials are not making enough money and buying the baby boomers' homes, and they don't want to live in the suburbs. They want to live in urban areas. Now we're hocking our future to them because we are building up this debt ratio like crazy. You know, I think the federal deficit right now, the total debt actually is 78% of GDP.
Yeah.
And the
staggering.
The Congressional Office of Budget expects us to have $28.7 trillion over the next 10 years with 96% of GDP. But the scary thing is that's not including a $1.4 trillion infrastructure budget. And we all know that we have crumbling everything, subways, roads, you know, bridges, and even in Europe. I just saw a report on something in Europe just decided that, I think it was France, decided a certain percentage of their bridges you really shouldn't drive over, and they don't have the money put aside to fix the infrastructure. So if we add another catastrophic, you know, series of hurricanes, earthquakes, look at all the things that have been happening and how much FEMA's been spending. So you just look at what Florence is going to cost us right now. None of those are factored into that debt number. So that's a really big concern. And, you know, if interest rates go up, the cost of debt goes up.
Right, servicing that debt. So what is your advice to investors at this point in terms of a portfolio? And I know everybody's got to do it based on their specific conditions, but what are some things to think about at this point, Kathy? Just got about 40 seconds.
So I think you really just have to be very careful. You know, you really need to look forward. It's 2020 hindsight. So be careful about being greedy. Fear and greed rule the market. Fear is a much greater motivator. It's not bad to take profits. You know, bulls make money, bears make money, pigs get slaughtered, right? And so that's the old trend. So I think you really need to look at some alternatives. You need to look at some things like gold, look at some commodities,
wow,
look at some hedges in your portfolio. Diversify out from the traditional stocks and bonds.
So, right. Jason Kelly, are you a believer?
I'm a believer. Well, I'm a believer in Kathy Boyle. I don't know
well
if I'm
done,
a believer
Kathy.
In, you know, technical analysis overall. I still think I'm not smart enough to get it. But Kathy did a great job explaining it.
So little MACD, little RSI, little Bollinger Band. I don't know.
Think if I have this right, she's a fellow Westchesterian. So that helps bring it all together. Kathy Boyle is president at Chapin Hill Advisors, joining us on the phone from New York City. You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week.